Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. 6 months ago, I spoke with this same group of farmers from the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture. The lockdown had just started, and some grocery store shelves were empty. Everyone was buying toilet paper, but you could not find yeast to save your soul because people had started to bake bread at home. Farmers were getting their crops in the ground at the time, and processing plants were shut down, leaving beef and hog farmers scrambling. Dairy farmers were forced to throw out milk because the demand was gone. Places like Tim Hortons no longer needed cream because they were closed. Well, it's different today. Farmers are harvesting crops, the markets have settled, more things are open, and the demand has returned. So what does this mean for farmers in Northumberland? And what is the future of our food supply in the face of a possible second wave? This is my interview with Northumberland Federation of Agriculture President Sid Atkinson and the board members Mark DeYoung, Paul Burnham, and local Ontario Federation of Agriculture Rep Bruce Butter. I am so pleased to welcome here on Consider This Today members of the Northumberland Federation of Agriculture. Gentlemen, welcome to Consider This.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks, Rob.
As a farmer, could you give us a perspective of what has been going on during the last 6 months? I believe we last spoke in April, and there's been a lot of things happening in terms of agriculture over the last 6 months. Could I just start with you, Sid, and I'll go through the panel, and let's talk about, from your perspective, what are the big things that have taken place?
Well, naturally, COVID is a huge piece of it. But I'd like to just speak to the drought. Like, some of the areas in this county got next to no rain through June, July, and August. And the rains have been in streaks. Some guys would have some on the next road north would or south would have none. And that was a difference maker for our crops. Like, there's areas that will have maybe a third of a harvest. And there's areas where it's going to be normal. Personally, in our neighborhood, we're going to be close to normal. But I know some over in Seymour Township, east of the river, they just got shut out on the rains and they're really hurting. So, as a dairy farmer and a dairy community over there, those guys are just scrambling to get enough hay and corn to keep their herds going for the winter. So,
what do you attribute this type of rain?
I farmed for 42 years and it comes and it goes.
Fair enough. Paul, could you give us an update?
Yeah, sure. Again, Sid alluded to the weather issue. Of course, we're always subject, we're victims of the weather, or victims or receivers of good weather. And from the horticultural industry, some of the crops, most of the crops made it through our particular farm. We had a really dry spell during June, July, and then we finally had some rain. I think it was late July. But our soil on our farm is good enough that it withstood all that drought. We often would watch the skies and we would see rain coming in from the west over Port Hope, and we would hear it's raining in Port Hope, and then it would break up before it got to our farm. That's how localized the situation was. I guess on our farm, one of the issues that people heard a lot about was a migrant worker issue. We normally have four workers all summer. They come from Mexico. And we appreciate their help, and we need their help just to harvest and plant our crops. And it started off with, we had to isolate the guys for 2 weeks once they got in from Mexico. And we ended up only getting one directly from Mexico, and he was isolated for 2 weeks, and everything went well. And then we ended up transferring workers from other farms just to make up our complement of four. And we finally got four in mid-August, so we're now okay for apple harvest. But it was a challenge. There's lots of farms in the province that didn't get the workers they had. And I've heard that produce prices are in stores are high this year. And that could be because there might be a little bit of a shortage. Some produce didn't get planted because of the worker shortage, and there are other issues like that. But that's the main issue in our neck of the woods. We started our farm market. We started with a curbside only, and that didn't work so well. Our business fell about 30%. And then once we opened the doors to limited access and all the COVID rules, once people could actually get in there, business picked up, and we're probably 90% of normal now.
That's incredible. What do you think it was about the curbside?
Well, we started off, we only would allow ordering for the day before. Like if you wanted something, then you had to order the day before and then come and certain hours the next day and pick it up. And a lot of our business, when people walk into our market, they smell the baking and they buy baking. So we missed that impulse buying. And, you know, when people don't see something and they forget they needed it, they don't order it online. It just wasn't, I think a lot of businesses were the same with curbside. It just didn't fill the bill. But once we opened the doors, it picked up.
Bruce, I'd like you to join the conversation. Could you give us the last 6 months from your perspective?
Sure. I would just echo, obviously, what Paul and Sid have said. From a local aspect, I think, and because I'm a provincial director for OFA, maybe I could just offer a little bit of broader perspective, but much the same scenario right across the province. Some areas were really, really hard hit with the drought. Tremendous shortage of people. The Hamilton area, he said up to date, as of last Tuesday, they still really hadn't had any rain. They were in their worst drought they'd had in 13 years. So they're suffering there. And then on the other side of the spectrum, one of the directors from up in Grey Bruce area had one rain, and that was approximately 7 inches. So although I'm not sure 7-inch rain does a lot of good, they got all the rain that everybody else should have got. So it seems to be right across the province that the weather issue, it's localized. Some areas have lots of rain, some don't. But there is a real shortage of feed across the province, forage feed especially, because the first cut was pretty short. And I think one of the bigger issues COVID-related, like Paul referred to, was the labor issue. And it was magnified up in the western part of the province where they have a lot more workers. Obviously, they had issues with workers getting COVID. There were some deaths up that area. So it kind of cast a black shadow on the agricultural sector, just from the fact that they sort of were saying that these guys weren't being treated the way they should. They didn't have the proper facilities, and so there was a bit of work done in that area to show that they were giving them the proper facilities. In some cases, it was the workers' fault that were going off the farm and coming in contact with the COVID, and that really wasn't something they could do. So province-wide issue that way for sure, and it has affected, I think, the agricultural sector just from a perspective from what people were seeing.
Thank you. Mark, I'd like to bring you in now. I know you're a hog farmer. So could you tell us from your perspective what the last 6 months has been like?
Well, like we were talking about in the spring, we were talking about the processing shortage and closures of plants. I would say that it's been a very tough summer. Normally, we have a huge price increase through the summer because of barbecuing, and a lot of pork is being processed at that time. This year, because of the processing there was closures, and there was reduced operating staff capacity to to process a lot of the livestock and hogs in particular, that the inventories of the pork actually have reduced, the frozen inventories reduced down to the lowest level since 2011. Nearly 200 million pounds of pork reduction due to this closures and reduction. We still have a report from 3 weeks ago. We still have there 250,000 hogs backed up on farm still across North America, which I don't know how we're going to get this cleaned up until we get to full capacity of processing again. The processors have not been bidding a fair market value on these hogs because of they can't process them and they can't market something they don't have. So it's really a real problem here. And even China they're starving for pork. We cannot send it to them because of the risk of shorting our own inventories and market here at home. So we're in a devastating spot.
Let's talk for a minute about the way we buy and consume food. I know during the pandemic, this has changed dramatically. And, you know, we were talking earlier about how people are purchasing food, but also how they're consuming food and what they're consuming. Are these going to be long-term changes?
Oh, fair question, Rob. I bounced back to something that my mother always said, and that is, this too shall pass. And in the dairy industry, we've had a whole lot of minor adjustments in our quota, restrictions on how much milk we could produce for that month. But it's starting to sort itself out. And the coffee shops, they're still using cream. Drive-throughs at Tim Hortons are very busy. The other part of this is people have to do their staycation thing now. They're vacationing local. But the other frustrating part to me is the sit-down restaurant trade. And there's a lot of coffee sold there. There's a lot of cheese sold there. Those restaurants, they can only be at half capacity, and they're still not even at, the tables aren't full. My wife and I love to go out for supper, and it's no problem getting a reservation. It's not booming like it should be, or like it was a year ago. So there is quite a bit of pivoting going on there. The other part is they have adjusted for their consumer sales from the grocery stores to the food service industry, whatever that balance was. The processors are able to pivot there. From what I'm seeing, there's more stability now than there was 3 months ago. In fact, the quota increase, they asked for incentive production now to cover off for this fall and kids going back to school and that kind of stuff. I think it's going to sort itself out. The wild card is international trade. How much milk is going to come in from the States? How much cheese is going to come in from Europe? Those are things we have to balance for now.
Going back then to you, Mark, from your perspective, I mean, you say right now things are very much backed up and there's this surplus within North America. How do you see it? Is it short term? Is it medium term? Are we looking long term?
Well, I think a lot of agriculture in Canada is similar to the oil fields. We are here in Canada, we are trying to export as much as possible. Like we're an export country. And if we can't process or ship product that has the ability to be shipped to other countries, I think we're going to be in this for a very long time. Like some of our grains and oil seeds, you know, they can be shipped out because there's not a lot of processing that goes with that. But when we're talking about fresh meats, frozen meats, those are types of products that like they're perishable. So they have to be treated in a way that it can be exported out. So I'm thinking we're going to be in this for a much longer time with anything that needs to be processed before it can be exported.
Paul, we're in a very important time of year as crops are being harvested. What's different this time from your perspective?
I think in the hort industry, there's still a great demand for it. I'll take apples, for instance. It's a great crop on the trees. As long as you have your workers ready to go, then they're going to get harvested and they're going to be stored. Apples are something that processors like Knight's Orchards or Algoma Orchards, they put the apples in cold storage or controlled atmosphere storage, and the apples are kept for a long time. So I don't think there's going to be anything changing in the apple industry. There still seems to be the demand. There's a lot of export going on there too. But again, stuff can be stored for a long period of time before it's exported. So from that perspective, I think we're okay. I've seen an increase in demand for local product. People are scrambling to get local produce whenever they can. And we've seen an increase in that. So as long as we can keep supplying that, there's lots of demand, and then things are still looking pretty good.
Now, have there been any local farmers facing a shortage of workers? I know you alluded to your situation, but are you aware of any others?
I've heard there are some local shortages, and again, you can scramble to try and get local help. There are lots of people out there with no jobs, and we've had a few applications in our place. So I think if the proper person shows up, there's probably enough local help to get the job done. And I would hope that the people looking for work will consider that farming is a little bit different. When there's crop to be harvested, it needs to be harvested now and not just on Monday to Friday. It needs to be harvested 7 days a week. So that's the trick in getting local help. People that want to work that hard. I mean, it's for a short period. Apples, I mean, they're in full swing now, and they'll be done by the end of October. So you've got about 8 weeks to make your money and get your crop off. So.
And Mark, I'm going to come back to you for just a second. I know beef and hog farmers have faced difficulties, and you've alluded to this, with processing plants facing COVID-19 outbreaks. And I know that that's had an impact on the pork industry. Has there been any move towards increasing the processing capacity in Ontario?
Well, the Pork Producers Association, the Ontario Pork Producers, have tried to get the provincial and federal government to get interest into Ontario, especially because it's where we produce a lot of pork. We're the largest pork producer in Canada, second to Quebec. Like a lot of our live hogs are being exported to Quebec and some into the States and a little bit to Manitoba, just because we're short of capacity here to process. We've lost a processor probably 5 years ago, I think it was, and there seems to be a real problem with the environment for another processor to come into this province because of the capacity that's in Quebec and in Manitoba. We also have the labor here in Ontario is expensive. Our hydro and utilities are very expensive here. It's not exactly the best environment for a business to come into.
So Bruce, maybe you could elaborate on this from the Ontario Federation of Agriculture's perspective. Is there a lobbying effort going on right now to increase the processing capacity here in the province?
Well, there's been some money, I guess, come from the federal government, COVID aid, to put into processing. But I mean, we've been in negotiation with pork and beef and veal and all those people. Realize needs are planned in Toronto closed down last year before COVID hit. So that's just made the whole problem worse. I mean, yeah, we're supporting that. I don't know whether we would say there's a major lobby to do that, but we realize that the processing sector is really needs more capacity to get rid of the surpluses that are out there.
Sid, I'd like to come back to you and get a perspective on local markets.
The big difference that I'm seeing and hearing is the local food thing with the freezer beef and freezer pork and the produce. The sweet corn roadside stand guys, I understand they're having a banner year. I know my friends that are in the beef business, they're big getting processing to get those animals processed for their freezer beef trade. And it's quite a shift. The consumer wants that local connection with the guy that's producing their food. And the other thing that we're seeing is, like, you go to the farm store, supply stores, there's been a huge run on chicken wire, if you can believe it, because so many people are doing backyard flocks now and getting those chicks, be they turkeys, be they chickens, whatever. It's quite a noticeable difference. I'd just like to comment on something that Paul brought up there about the labor thing. There's a lot of dairy farmers that are quite desperate for helpers, and they're offering good full-time jobs, and they pay decent wages. They're just having trouble finding people that will get up early in the morning to do those milking chores. It's not hard physical work anymore. We have machines that do that. But to find somebody that will be there, because those animals expect us to be there, it's a bit of a problem. So there's quite a few farms that they're short-staffed, and this is in the dairy, and this is year-round work. But as far as local and dairy, well, our milk is picked up every day and directed by Dairy Farmers of Ontario to the plants that need it. But I do know that there are a lot of consumers that are very loyal to their local plants.
That's interesting about the labor piece, because I know that the Northumberland County had an economic recovery task group that was consulting with all the different sectors about coming out of the pandemic and how the local economy needed to change. I'm wondering, have you received enough government support? Because I know in the early days, you were very concerned that there was enough monies flowing through to help support you in the way you did. How do you feel about the levels of support you've gotten from municipal, provincial, and federal governments? Sid, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm just at a little bit of a loss to think of all the government checks that have come in. I can think of one that was supposed to be a compensation piece for the European trade deal. And I had to spend a lot of money to be able to qualify for that on improvements on the dairy farm. The one piece, and I'll take it a different direction for you, Rob. All those curb checks took away the need for people to get back to work. Now you may think, well, Sid, you're sounding pretty hard here, but if you got that money coming in, you don't really need to go to work. And so you hear about all these people that are unemployed or underemployed and all these jobs going wanting. It all lines up.
Paul, what about you?
I think that agriculture as a whole is in a pretty good spot. It's one industry. People need to eat, and as long as people need to eat, then there's going to be a market for what you produce. I know pork and the meat industry is having problems getting processing, but there's still a market eventually for their product. The horticulture industry, there's a market for their product. I know we had one government program where when we bring the guys over from Mexico, we have to isolate them for 14 days and pay them. There was a government grant to cover that, so that was okay. As far as everything else goes, there is that $40,000 loan that was available. And I think there's a lot of other industries maybe that need that. I know retail industries are really hard hit. A lot of them are closing, restaurant industries. I think they're in a lot worse position than agriculture is right now. So I overall, I think we're doing as, except for the first few months that we were closed. We did receive a wage subsidy at that point because we were down over 30%. But then once we got up over the hump, so to speak, we didn't need that anymore. So I think overall we're in pretty good shape.
Mark, how about you? What do you feel about the level of support you've received from the three levels of government?
Well, I would have to agree with Paul that, as much as we are feeling desperate in the hog industry, there was some support there from that $40,000 loan and some of our other programs that we were able to capitalize on. I feel most disheartened for the restaurant trade. I think they're devastated. I can't really say that I should complain harshly or bitterly that I did not get enough money from the government. So I think, I think we did okay. We're doing all okay. We'll survive.
Okay. Sid, let me ask you, is there any chance of us facing a food shortage when it comes into the fall and into the winter?
I don't think so, Rob. Like it's been brought up before, we are an exporting country. And like Mark said, we're not going to be exporting pork to China to short our own consumers. And our own market will be a more profitable market to service. So it wouldn't make a lot of sense to send pork to China at export world prices and then ignore our own market. There will be, as far as grains go, there will be enough to look after this country. As far as dairy goes, you tell me how much milk we need and we will produce it. And that's the same attitude with across this province on 4,000 farms. Well, maybe 3,300 right now, but just give us the incentive and set the market and set the price so that we can make a dollar at it and the food will be there.
Is there anybody else on the panel that would disagree with anything that Sid has said? So once the harvest is in and things are settled into the winter, it can often be a time to reassess and to look forward. What are the bigger issues facing Northumberland farmers in the months ahead? And how about I'll start off with you, Mark? Why don't you go first?
I think the every harvest, like we do cash cropping as well as hogs. Weather is always an issue. You know, are we going to have an early frost? Are we going to have too much rain to delay harvest? Even though every year we do manage to get the harvest off, it's the stresses of all that. Our inability to co-mingle as farmers to have support from one another because of our physical distancing. Is it going to weigh more heavily on our mental health? I'm not. You know, these are things we're still concerned about. Even with our Federation of Agricultural meetings that we have locally, you know, we're trying to do Zooms. It's so uncomfortable. It was nice through a couple of summer months that we were able to get together in a larger setting outdoors to come together. But as colder weather comes, these are going to be constrictions. So yeah, it's just going to be a something that we're going to just have to keep encouraging each other to, for our mental health throughout the season. So,
Paul, how about you?
Yeah, I'd have to echo that. I think everybody's, not just farmers, everybody's getting kind of weary of the social distancing thing. And that's showing in the fact that some of the numbers are going up for testing in the younger, mostly in the younger generations. As far as harvest and things, we go through a cycle. Like right now, we're contemplating harvesting soybeans and edible beans, and soon we'll be into this harvesting corn. And that's going to go on like normal. And then we'll have to decide what to plant for next year. And I think the decisions there, I don't think are going to change a whole lot. The prices for commodities right now are pretty, fairly strong. The one thing about the cash crops is it's mostly mechanized, so that labor is not going to have a whole big effect on that, because most farmers are mechanized to the point where they need minimal labor. It's mainly local help. As far as imported labor, that I don't know where that's going to balance out over the next year. We'll see. I know it wasn't fun this year. You kind of on pins and needles whether you're going to get your workers or not. So hopefully that'll get streamlined to the point where we can rely on it. Although countries like Mexico are now being really hard hit by COVID. So harder than they were hit back in March and April. So that, unless that levels out, there might be more of a problem next year to get help.
Do you see any chance that the workers might even stay over the winter just to expedite things in the spring?
Well, we can't do that. Part of the contract that we signed through our agency is that workers can only be here for 8 months. They have extended that this year to 9 months, but at the end of 9 months, they have to go home. It's just part of the contract. I've asked guys if they want to stay a little bit, and they've said no. They'd rather be home with their families, and I think that's only fair. They have wives and children at home, and husbands. So, if I was here from Mexico and I see the numbers rising, I think I'd want to be home too, just to make sure everything's going all right back there. So there's that issue too. The guys might not want to come up here, but.
Sid, I'd like to give you the final word. What are the bigger issues facing Northumberland farmers in the months ahead?
I mentioned earlier about guys that were in severe drought areas and scrambling to get enough feed for their herds. There's uncertainty with COVID. There's uncertainty with world trade agreements. There's all kinds of pocket protectionism still built into these trade agreements. And, well, Mark alluded to this piece about mental health. And part of good mental health is having a network of friends that you interact with. And yeah, Zoom is nice. Yeah, the phone's nice. But there is a real comfort in eye-to-eye conversation. And that's lacking. I know I have a network of friends across this country that I call regularly. And they appreciate it. And I appreciate it. But it just isn't quite the same as sitting down over a cup of coffee and sorting out the world's problems. It's a frustrating new way of doing business, I guess. And to one of my little things, a personal note, I always love looking for deals at auction sales. And they just haven't been happening. There is just starting to open it up, but here they're limiting the crowds. But there's going to be a few auctions coming up. And yeah, that's a nice social gathering, and you get to see the state of the economy, why the prices people are paying for stuff, and you get to see other people's stuff. So, and looking forward to maybe just going to an auction sale and seeing how the world's working. So,
gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy, busy schedules to talk to me today. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.